Okay, so we're really close to Christmas. So what I'm doing is I've got a brand new theme tune for you. I just want to send it out there now. I hope you like this as much as the old one. Here we go. This is the Total Christmas Podcast with your host Jack, who's really handsome and he's also really cool. And you can listen to the Total Christmas Podcast, doesn't matter where you live, because it's the Total Christmas Podcast. And if you listen all year round, this is a new one. No, don't do that.
What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this?
Well, just me and my trusty old Red Ryder Carbine Action 2 on the Sharp Range Model Air Rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people. How are ya? How are you? It's Christmas. There's no getting away from it now. Like the last episode, it was a sort of start of December. Some curmudgeons are like, I'm not having it. It's not Christmas yet. It's Christmas now. And my little girl, Juno, she's like, is it Christmas? And we're like, yeah, it is Christmas. It's not Christmas Day, but it's Christmas. It's Christmas. We've got the tree up. We've got the lights outside. It's a bit abysmal, I won't lie to you. After I'd finished putting them up, Benji Pearson tore up in his car with his sister driving. He sat in the back laughing. That's fine, Benji, if that's how you want to live your life. We're tearing through the advent calendar. It is Christmas, and this is the last full episode before the big day. So I hope you're going to enjoy it. I've got to get straight into the episode, so let's get going. First off, I've got to start off with the likes. So all these following people like the Facebook page, I do really appreciate it. So we have Hayley Fitzgerald, Dan Carlson, Tulsa McLean, Rick Hoyt, Catherine Jill Cardno, Jennifer Guerton Himmerick, Carla Ford. Do you know what? I've met Carla Ford. She is gorgeous. And I've got to say, her husband is a very handsome man as well. And he's got a great podcast. Elizabeth Nye, Judy Branco, David A. Denning, Stephen Allman, Andy Gnoss. I said that right, Andy. Stacey McKinsey, Jane Margaret, and Claire Jones. All those people like the Facebook page. Really appreciate it. If you want to hear me say your name, all you got to do is like the Facebook page and then I'll read it out in the next episode. So I've had a lot of emails and a lot of stuff that I want to play for you and read out for you. First off, I want to start with one of the people that just liked the podcast, a gentleman by the name of Dan Carlson. Now, if you go on the Facebook page, I did actually put up a post about what Dan does, and it's a bit late now because we're so close to Christmas, but he makes the most wonderful woodwork stuff, like chopping boards and coasters and you name it, that sort of stuff, and it looks glorious. He sent me a message and I want to play it for you now.
Hey Jack, this is Dan from Wilmington, North Carolina, and I wanted to share with you my Christmas story. This story takes place when I was about 7 years old, and on Christmas Eve, early that morning, there was a terrible winter storm that knocked out the power to my neighborhood. And so having no electricity and no heat, my parents thought it would be best if we packed up all the presents and headed over to my grandmother's house. And I remember being over there in this old 1930s two-story house watching classic Christmas movies like It's a Wonderful Life and Miracle on 34th Street. And for the first time ever, My young eyes witnessed a Christmas story, and I was absolutely enamored from the opening scene to the end credits. I just could not peel my eyes away from the TV, and I became obsessed with everything from the 1930s through the 1950s, early 60s, the music, the cars, the way they dressed. I wanted to live in that time period. And it didn't help that the next morning, as we're opening presents on Christmas Day, my grandmother puts on these old records. And for the first time, my young ears hear the vocal stylings of Bing Crosby, Frank Sinatra, and Nat King Cole. That was it. I was hooked. I love crooners' Christmas music. I still listen to Dean Martin and Frank and Bing and Nat even when it's not Christmas, because they just don't make voices like that anymore. Christmas has always seemed innocent and wholesome to me, and the nostalgia of that time period also seems innocent and wholesome to me, and I love it, and I've always been a bit of an old soul, so Christmas is always a sentimental time for me, but I always wish I could go back to that time period and experience what it was like then. For now, crooner's Christmas music and a Christmas story will have to suffice. So as I sit here and enjoy a nice cold adult beverage and smoke my pipe, and listen to your podcast. I'm just reminded of how much I enjoy Christmas, and I love A Christmas Story. I love Bing Crosby, and I love your podcast. So cheers to you, Jack, and Merry Christmas.
You know, he really does have a point there. There is something about the old-time Christmas that I think a lot of us yearn for. And it's out there, you know, you can still listen to the music and still watch the films. I don't smoke a pipe, but I can certainly appreciate what Dan's saying there about sitting back and enjoying the feeling of a 1930s Christmas. Thanks for that, Dan. If you want to check out Dan's website, he hasn't asked me to do this, but I just think the stuff he's got on there is so good. If you want to check it out, just look up Burly Boards on Facebook. Really good stuff on there. Thanks for that, Dan. And a Merry Christmas to you, buddy. So in the last episode, I mentioned that Benji Pearson is our new self-appointed American Scandinavian correspondent, and he sent me the following email to just explain a few things. It says, I assume that after your latest episode, you'll get a barrage of emails asking what the function of the self-appointed American Scandinavian correspondent is. I didn't, but never mind. So I thought I would fill you in. I also don't want to step on the toes. Toe stepper sounds like a Yule lad. That's a good point. It does. Of my fellow self-appointed correspondents. I am an American of Scandinavian ancestry, Danish and Swedish with German and English mixed in there. My wife is also of Scandinavian and English ancestry and lived in Sweden for a while. Many of the early settlers that immigrated to the state of Utah came from the Scandinavian countries, and there were various Scandinavian heritage groups throughout the state to celebrate our ancestors. At our house, we celebrate many Scandinavian traditions, mostly Swedish, but with our own American twists. One example of a Scandinavian tradition that has come to America and taken on new form is to have Jultomten, also known simply as Tomten. If you've never heard of Jultomten, I am familiar with him because my wife's best friend has moved to Sweden. She's married a Swedish guy. It actually means Christmas elf, and Tomten means elf, so he's like the Christmas elf, and he comes on Christmas Eve. So to carry on from Benji's email, Tomten visits our house on Christmas Eve, or Julafton, that's Christmas Eve. To the best of my knowledge, many Scandinavians in Scandinavia have their big gift-giving on Christmas Eve, which is true, that's a fact. Our Tomten only brings small gifts for the kids and reads a story to the family. This is the story. And he's given me a link to a YouTube clip, which I'll definitely put on the Facebook page. So if you go on the Facebook page, have a look out for that. My sons take turns playing the role of Tomten from year to year. Then after all have gone to bed, Santa Claus visits in a traditional American fashion. So we have two jolly gift-giving elves. This is just one example of American Scandinavian content I can bring to the table. So there we go. If anyone was in any doubt of what my American Scandinavian correspondent does, that's it. There you go. We've all learnt something today, kids, and I think we appreciate that. So thank you very much, Benji. And thank you. Benji sent me a card as well, which was really nice. So I appreciate that. It's a glorious picture of him and his family, and it's up on our wall at home. Thanks, Benji. Next up, we've got an email from a lovely lady called Caroline. I'm going to say Caroline, but it could be Carolyn, because there's no E at the end, but it's spelled with a Y. Some people go either way. I don't know what to do. In situations like this, I just sort of hope for the best, really. And when I say situations like this, I mean doing a podcast. I don't mean talking about, well, everything, pretty much my whole life. When I say in situations like this, I mean my whole life. Okay, can I carry on? Thank you. So she's only sent this email. I just received it today, and I'm going to read out what she's put, because this goes back to episode 2, which seems like it was like, what, I don't know, 7 months ago? Because it was 7 months ago. All right. Okay. It says, hey, just found your podcast. Love it. So write that down, kids. I listened to your episode 2 where you talked about the early 70s cartoon version of A Christmas Carol. If you haven't listened to that episode, in a nutshell, this was like a condensed 25-minute cartoon where Alistair Sim played Scrooge again for the second time, and it's very dark. It actually won the Oscar for Best Short Film that year. Caroline says, I totally remember watching this in primary school, or grade school as we call it here in Canada. It was a special treat for us since it involved bringing a projector in and gathering the whole school together. I was terrified of the cartoon even before Jacob Marley unbound his jaw, but man, that was the scariest thing I ever saw. I scooted over on the carpet to where my older brother was sitting, and he told me to get lost. So no comfort there. And let's face it, kids, that's what older siblings frequently are like, isn't it? It's terrible. I tell you what, if you've got an older sibling that in that situation put their arm around you and said, oh, it's okay, then you've got a good older sibling, and you should send them a letter this Christmas and say, you're actually a good older sibling, just so you know. Or not, do what you want, it's your life. Where was I? Anyway, I did watch the whole cartoon and was scarred, as many kids growing up in the 70s were. I was so happy to hear you talk about this version, and your opinion that it was not meant for kids resonated with me so much. And then she's put, thanks for your podcast, perhaps you will help me through other childhood trauma experiences in the course of the podcast. Who knows? Keep up the good work. Good work! Referring to my podcast, eh? So there you go. Good work, she said. Thank you, Carolyn. I really do appreciate your email. And Merry Christmas to you. And now I have a message from Britt Wilson that he emailed through, and I need to play this.
Not coming.
Hey Jack, this is Britton. Nice to meet you. I am actually the CEO of Correspondence for the Total Christmas Podcast. Nice to have you hosting my show there. Appreciate that. I wanted to share with you how I found out that Santa isn't real. I was roughly 10 years old, and I had my suspicions, and I wanted a pool table, or billiards, not sure what you call it over there.
Yeah, we call it pool or billiards, depending on which one you're playing.
But as you may have guessed, that's a rather expensive gift. And so I asked my parents for it, and they said, no, that's just too much. So I was being sly and thought, I'll just ask Santa. So I told my parents, that's okay, I'll ask Santa for a pool table. That was the day that I found out that there was no such thing as Santa. Thank you.
Do you know, it's funny, that story, because when I was a kid, I had no idea how old I was, but my brother and I both wanted a mini pool table, although it was to play snooker. It was a snooker table we were after. And Christmas came, and we got one, and my mum and dad were like, yeah, Santa told us that this is for you two to share. And there was no doubt in our mind that that is exactly what had happened, that my mum and dad actually had a brief chat with Santa when he was delivering the presents at our house. It's like, yeah, of course that's what happened. They had a chat with Santa. He wasn't in a rush. He had time to stop and have a quick chat and tell us to share the pool table. That was it. I don't know if my older brother didn't believe it, because he was 2 years older than me. I can't remember how old I was. But there you go. Thank you for that, Britt. And not only did Britt send that through, he sent me another story, which he was too lazy to record. And I've got to read it out to you. So I'm not going to put on the accent, because I can't. And I don't want to. So this is Britt's other story, and I really like this. So here we go. This is what he's put, okay? It says, I don't know if I've ever heard you do a segment of Christmas traditions, but I thought I would share one for your listeners if you deem it worthy. Now, here's the thing. I did start a segment because Scott Newman sent me a tradition, like, right, I think it might have been like episode 4 or 5, something like that. And then I said, if you've got any traditions, send them through. No one did. So this is the second one. So thanks for this, Britt. It's really nice, this is. I love this. Here we go. My wife and I started dating back in college on November the 29th, 2011. That's nice, isn't it? That he knows the exact date when they started dating. November the 29th, 2011. I've no idea when I met my wife. Like, seriously, I'm not just talking, like, to the date. I'm talking what year. In fact, I don't know what happened there. It's like, I've got 20 years of blank, and somewhere in those 20 years, she turned up. Next thing I know, I'm married and I've got 2 kids. There you go. Where was I? Oh, yeah, so, start again. My wife and I started dating back in college on November the 29th, 2011. Put that in your diary, kids. Their anniversary, their 10-year anniversary, that's going to be coming up next year. I took her to dinner. Oh, well done, Britt. He's trying to impress everyone. Took her to dinner, did you? Yeah, well done, big spender. No need for that. Where was I? He's going to be sitting there listening to this thinking, why did I send my story to that idiot? I don't know, Britt. You've heard the podcast. You know, this is par for the course, mate. Right, I'm starting again, right from scratch. No more interruptions, unless it's really funny. My wife and I started dating back in college. You know that bit. Should we just move on to... This is the next sentence. I took her to dinner where I choked on a very hot pepper and had to grab her water for heat relief. Then we went to our town's Christmas light display in Fayetteville, Arkansas, just to walk around and enjoy the merriment and one another. He's put, Google Lights of the Ozarks, Fayetteville, AR. That's Arizona. Do you know what I just did? I just Googled them. I Googled the lights of the Ozarks, Fayetteville, Arizona. They're glorious. They are glorious. Go and do it now. Pause the podcast. Seriously, pause it. I don't want you Googling while you're listening to the podcast, okay? Because you won't know, because you'll miss bits, and it's really good. So Google lights of the Ozarks, Fayetteville, Arizona. That's unbelievable. I thought my display was good. I didn't. I thought my display was good. This is incredible. Have a look at them. They're unbelievable. I bet, imagine taking someone... Have a look at them and then think taking someone there on a first date. Well done, Britt. Well done, sir. Right, where was I? After chatting, she realised I had never seen White Christmas. She wouldn't stand for it, so we went back to her apartment. Oh yeah, sorry, listen, where was I? So we went back to her apartment and watched it. Since that day, on November the 29th at night, we watched White Christmas. This year was our 9th in a row. We haven't missed one yet, including one year when we were travelling to see her family for Thanksgiving, and we watched it in her auntie and uncle's spare bedroom on a small laptop after everyone else had fallen asleep. Through dating, marriage, and the coming of our first son, we have never missed it, and I hope we never do. Merry Christmas from my family to yours and your listeners, Britt and Wilson. Wow. I love that story. I really do. And also, I've got to say, it's nice to have you on as CEO of Correspondence, because, to be honest, my other correspondents, they've been letting me down a bit lately, you know. So hopefully, having you on as the CEO of Correspondence, you can, you know, whip them into shape. Your job now, not mine. So thanks for that, Britton. Fabulous. Now it's time for this. This is the most wonderful present I've ever received. So before we get into this week's suggestion, I've got another email from a lovely listener, and this one is from Ellery. And the subject line says present suggestion. And she says this: I just found your podcast last week. I'm not sure if I should be giving out gift suggestions. One time, my co-worker was lamenting she didn't know what to get her mother-in-law for Christmas. I suggested a year's subscription to a Fruit of the Month club. As soon as I said it, I remembered she told me a few months ago that her mother-in-law had been diagnosed with cancer and only had a couple of months to live. So I am absolutely no help to you for a gift suggestion. I don't know what to say about that. I can't really make a joke about it. But no, Ellery. Probably best if you don't give any suggestions. Ellery also sent me a lovely picture for Robin and Juno of her daughters and Robin and Juno. They don't know what Robin and Juno look like, but it was a lovely picture. And so I thought I'd get Robin to send a quick message. So here's Robin for you.
Hello, Renal and Joanna. Thank you for the lovely picture. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Bye.
So let's get on with this week's suggestion. You've left it too late, kids. Seriously, it's like this is going out, what, 4 days, 5 days before Christmas? And you're listening to me give you a suggestion on what to get. I've still got a suggestion. Gift cards. And you're there thinking, gift cards? That's like giving someone some money, but saying, here's some money, but you can only spend it in this location. And you know what? That's still a good thing. And I'll tell you why. Because I think gift cards are good. I do. I think they're a great thing. But you need to frame it right. If you get one of those gift cards that can be used in loads of different stores, it's not the best because they'll just end up getting them their day-to-day crud. What you want to do is get them a gift card for somewhere special so that they're going to buy something for themselves. Okay. I remember one year, my brother sent me an Amazon gift card. Amazon sells everything. That's pretty much like sending me 20 quid rather than sending me a gift card. But it was an Amazon gift card. I went on there and I bought myself a Charlie Brown t-shirt and I was chuffed to bits. I wouldn't have bought that Charlie Brown t-shirt if he hadn't sent me a gift card. If he'd sent me 20 quid, I would have put that 20 quid in my wallet and probably spent it on petrol or beer. Actually, beer, that would have been good. But I like my t-shirt. If you have really left it this late, one, shame on you. Two, don't feel bad about getting a gift card. As long as you put a message in there saying something like, please get something that you really want, or please treat yourself with this. You might think that's a bit of a cop-out, but I think it's a great idea. If I get a gift card from someone, I'm going to use it for something that I really want. If I get cash from someone, I'm going to spend it on beer, kids. I'm going to spend it on beer. That's what's going to... Or mulled wine this time of year. That's this week's suggestion. And if you don't like it, I don't care. I really do not care. Okay, boys and girls, I've got to admit, most of my listeners, a massive percent, it's something like 60-70% of my listeners are in the USA. So when I play It's Christmas All Over the World and I'm talking about the USA, you'll be thinking, what? What? And that's fine, because I've got a bit of a treat for you. The first time my US correspondent emailed me, he had questions about mince pies, because I'd done a segment on them, but he wanted to clarify a few things. And this year, he actually has bought himself some mince pies off Amazon. He's bought Mr. Kipling's. That's the biggest brand. They sell the most mince pies each year in the world, I think. Yeah, he's got himself his mince pies. and he's going to taste it. So this is a first for Scott Newman. I'll play you the clip. Here we go.
Hello, Jack, and hello, all you beautiful people. This is Scott, the self-appointed U.S. correspondent, and I have exciting news today. I have in my possession a mince pie. Not the mince meat pie that my mother used to make growing up. This is a proper British-style little hand pie. I'd say it's probably maybe 2 inches in diameter. The freshness of this pie is a little bit questionable at this point. It's quite crumbly. I don't know if that's a normal thing, but I am going to take my first bite of a mince pie, and I'm going to let all you people know what I think here. This is an American's perspective. So if any of you have misophonia and you don't like to hear people chewing, you might want to jump ahead about 30 seconds right now, but here we go. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The texture is quite dry. It's really, really good. It tastes exactly like the mincemeat. Let me swallow so you don't hear me chewing anymore. It tastes exactly like the mincemeat my mom used to make growing up. In fact, my mom makes a raisin cake that has a very, very similar taste. I'd be shocked if it's any different ingredients. I probably should have brought some water into the recording booth with me today because I'm having trouble swallowing at this point. It's extremely dry and crumbly. This tastes like some kind of shortbread. But I would give this a 5 out of 5. I think this is fantastic, quite delicious, very pronounced on the raisin. This is a Mr. Kipling brand that Jack recommended to me. And I ordered it on Amazon. It was $9.99. I don't have an affiliate link, so if you want to go buy it, you know, knock yourself out. It took quite a while to get here, but totally worth the wait. So, Jack, if I construed any negative feelings toward mince pies in the past, I totally apologize. I would have been absolutely wrong. This is a fantastic little thing. And, you know, if there are any heads of U.S. corporations listening, why don't you guys make these things? These are really good. So I really enjoy it. And thanks for putting up with me, you beautiful people. Merry Christmas.
So there you go. That was a rousing success, wasn't it? Yes. Mince pies, kids. You can't go wrong. Big thank you to my U.S. correspondent, Scott, there. If you're not listening to his podcast, it's called Jingle Jank. Go to jinglejank.com. If you're not listening to it, why not? Email me and tell me why not, because you should be. It's so good. I listened to it the other day. The last episode was my favourite yet. They played funny Christmas songs, and there was one about gift cards, which was really good and quite apt for this episode. Anyway, thanks again, Scott. There you go. That's what mince pies taste like. The answer is glorious. So while we're here, a few weeks ago, Scott sent me an email with a link to a thing called Sainsbury's Mince Pie Wheats. And what they are, if you're familiar with Kellogg's Raisin Splits, or I think they're called Kellogg's Raisin Wheats now, they're pretty much mini shredded wheat stuffed with raisins. Well, these Sainsbury's mince pie wheats are mini shredded wheat stuffed with mince pie filling. And they're lovely. And I bought a box, ate them. I've got 2 more boxes in the cupboard so I can have Sainsbury's mince pie wheats every day up till Christmas. It has revolutionised my Christmas breakfast experience. And what's fantastic about this is if Scott hadn't sent me the email, I probably never would have found out about them. And Scott is my US correspondent, sending me information about stuff from the UK. Gotta hand it to the man, he's doing a fantastic job out there. Thanks again for that, Scott. Now I've got something a little bit different for you, because back at the start of when I was recording my first episode of the podcast, I recorded quite a lot of material that I never actually got around to using. Most of it have sort of drip-fed throughout the first few episodes. But this bit, I've never actually used. I ended up recording it twice because the first time I recorded it, I'd had a few beers and it was awful. So I recorded it a second time and it wasn't as awful, so it's half decent. But I thought, do you know what? We're coming up to Christmas. How about a blast from the past? And I play you this book review that I should have played about 7 months ago. So a brand new segment for you, something I haven't done before. This is a Christmas book review. I haven't got a jingle for this, so I'm just going to make one up. Here you go. It's a jingle for a Christmas book review. I hope you like reading books. And there you go. Yeah, hard to believe, kids, but I can actually read. Yeah, you wouldn't think it, but I can, to a degree. This book review is for Skipping Christmas, written by John Grisham. Interestingly, this book came out in 2001. Only 3 years later, they brought out the film of the book, Christmas with the Cranks. Now, I'm not 100% sure about this, but I swear I read that they changed the name to Christmas with the Cranks rather than Skipping Christmas because of Surviving Christmas with Ben Affleck and James Gandolfini, which was coming out the same year, so they had to change the name. And here's the thing, because of Christmas with the Cranks, a film called Christmas with the Coopers is called Love the Coopers, which came out in 2015, and it's like they didn't want people to get confused with that. But I'm not 100% sure about that, like I say, but I'm pretty sure. I'm sure enough to say it on a podcast, which is something, I suppose. When the book came out, it was the number one New York Times bestseller, and it was only John Grisham's like second book that wasn't legal fiction. It's a short book, which means you can get it read in December quite comfortably. You know, read a few pages at night when you get it, before you go to bed. Read it on the toilet. Read it on your way to work. You don't need me to tell you where you can do your reading. That's your decision, not mine. And it's because it's so short, you could even fit in like your yearly read of A Christmas Carol as well. Might even have time for Polar Express. That's a kid's book though, isn't it? Yeah. Anyway, so here's the blurb. Imagine a year without Christmas. No crowded shops, no corny office parties, no fruitcakes, no unwanted presents. That's just what Luther and Nora Crank have in mind when they decide that just this once, they'll skip the holiday altogether. Theirs will be the only house on the street without a rooftop Frosty the Snowman. They won't be hosting their annual Christmas Eve bash. They aren't even going to have a tree. They won't need one, because come December the 25th, they're setting sail on a Caribbean cruise. But as this weary couple is about to discover, skipping Christmas brings enormous consequences and isn't half as easy as they'd imagined. The novel behind the movie, Christmas with the Cranks. I tell you what, that's not something they want to be bragging about. The novel behind Christmas is, I've seen Christmas with the Cranks. It ain't that good. So here's how it goes. Their daughter, she's gone away. She's in South America saving poor people, I don't know. And Luther is at work, and he sits down and works out how much he spends on Christmas. And the figure he comes with is $6,100. Now, I don't know how they're spending $6,100. That's a lot of money. But that's the figure he comes to. And he goes to his wife. He's like, why don't we, instead of having Christmas, spend that money on a cruise and we'll still have some money left over. So they've got to reject all the neighbours that are coming around trying to sell them a tree, trying to sell them a fruitcake, trying to get them to put Frosty the Snowman up on their roof, because every house in the street has got Frosty on their roof. And they are going to reject all that and go away for Christmas. Just before Christmas, their daughter phones them up to surprise them and let them know she's actually coming home for Christmas. So the second half of the book is pretty much them trying to organise a big family party like they have every year, get Frosty up on the roof, get a Christmas tree, get everything for Christmas, really. And it's fun, and I enjoyed it. But I've got one main problem, and the problem is this, right? Here's the thing. They're going away on the 25th of December. Now, for me, the build-up of Christmas is the lead-up to Christmas. Like, my favourite day probably isn't even Christmas Day. It's probably Christmas Eve, because I love the build-up of it, and I think everyone does. And come December the 25th, sort of, you know, come the evening, you start to feel a bit melancholy, thinking, oh, it's all over now. You know, I've still got Boxing Day and New Year, but that's not the same. And I've got a mate, I swear, he's a bit of a curmudgeon. His missus loves Christmas. He's not such a fan. Come Boxing Day, he's got rid of all the decorations. All the tree and everything is packed away and gone. So they're going away on the 25th of December. That just doesn't seem right. They're still there for the build-up. They're still there. If they were having their party, you know, they'd have their tree up, you know, because the tree's normally there for the build-up to Christmas. And the Frosty, obviously, being up on the roof, everyone else in the street's got it up before Christmas. It's, you know, that's not... My point is, they should have said they were going away a week before Christmas for their cruise. Like, if they'd gone 2 weeks, then they could have come back in a new year. And then they've got an excuse to avoid everything, because they're not going to be around for the build-up for Christmas. Like, the last week is the biggest build-up. You know, the build-up's growing. So that's my problem with it. But otherwise, you know, it's good, it's nice, it's fun. The other thing is, though, right, when I first read the book, straight after, I watched Christmas with the Cranks. So in my head, when I'm talking about the book, I'm still thinking about the film. And the one thing I remember about the film is Jamie Lee Curtis running along and her boobs bouncing up and down. That's pretty much the one thing that sticks in my head. Actually, I've got to cut that bit out, haven't I? I can't be spending my time in a book review talking about Jamie Lee Curtis's boobs bouncing up and down. I've realised how short this segment is, so I'm actually keeping that bit in. I know. No one's impressed by this. Let's just move on. So generally, the idea behind the book is looking at the stress and the commercialisation of Christmas, and the idea that if your family's not going to be there, then is there really anything worth celebrating? And I personally think there is something worth celebrating. You know, I've got two girls. If they decide not to spend Christmas with us in years to come, maybe they moved away, maybe they're living overseas, I don't know. I'd like to think me and my wife will still celebrate Christmas, you know, in our own way. But I do understand where the book's coming from, and I do like that. It gives you a perspective on it. And, you know, it's because it's a book, because it's humorous. It's a twisted perspective. The way the neighbours are so giving them such a hard time for not buying a Christmas tree or not buying their fruitcake or not putting their frosty up on the roof, which seems to be the main problem. It's, you know, it's exaggerated, but it's fun. It's a good book. So, you know, why not get yourself a copy? You can buy it on Amazon for like a quid or something. It's dirt cheap, not including postage. Have a read of it. I think you'll enjoy it. Take something away from it. And you know what? If you don't want to read the book, if you don't like reading, then just watch Christmas with the Cranks, because that way you get to see Jamie Lee Curtis bouncing up and down. Her boobs, I mean. So I've just listened to this book review, and I've got to say, it is pretty bad. I'm so sorry. I reckon there are first graders that can do a better book report than this. But it is my first book review, and you know, it can only get better, can't it? Anyway, Skipping Christmas. So there we go. I recorded that. I've done the maths. It was about 9 months ago. It was something, wasn't it? Yeah. How things have changed, eh? Do you know what? Wouldn't it be nice if they had changed? Wouldn't it be nice if things had improved in the 9 months that I've been doing this podcast? Wouldn't that be nice? Well, tough. Right. Now it's this. I'm singing, I'm in a store and I'm singing, I'm in a store and I'm singing.
Hey, there's no singing at the North Pole. This is the part of the show where my four-year-old daughter sings the Christmas song. This week she's singing White Christmas. Take it away, Robin.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops listen and children.
That was the worst song ever. Don't know why I bother with this segment. She's rubbish.
So boys and girls, when I'm doing the research for this show, and I know what you're thinking, you don't do any research for this show, you just sit there and shout into a microphone. And yeah, most of the time I do, okay? But occasionally, on the odd occasion, I do a bit of research. And I know what you're thinking, no you don't. And I'm thinking, yes I do, alright? It's a tiny bit, okay? Just whatever you're thinking, it's less than that, okay? And you're still thinking, no you don't. No, I honestly, I'm not lying to you, I do a little bit of research, okay? Look, we can't have this argument now. I'm trying to do a podcast. Whenever I'm doing my research, I tend to end up on a website called Why Christmas, and it is just loaded with information about Christmas. It's such a great website. The chap that runs it is called James Cooper, and I emailed him to ask him if he'd have a chat with me about the website. And he said yes, and this is the interview. Here we go. So I'm here with James now, and he's going to tell us a little bit about his website. And if you're a big fan of Christmas, you've probably already seen it. It's called whychristmas.co.uk?
.com.
.com. Oh, already my research. And how long has the website been going, James?
Well, it is 20 this year, which is quite astonishing. I uploaded it on the 1st of November 2000, so it's nice and easy to remember when it's coming around for its birthday.
That's incredible. Do you know what? I wish I'd done the interview a couple of weeks ago. That would have been good, wouldn't it? On your birthday. You probably were having massive parties, actually, weren't you?
No, not much happened, really. It was
20 years, though. That's incredible.
I put a tweet out, you know, that was about it. Yeah, it's, and little did I think when I started it for one school that it would now take up much of my November and December.
That's the deal. When you started it, it was for a school?
Yes. My dad was the chair of governors at a large primary school in London, in Enfield, North London, where I lived at the time. I was just starting to get into website stuff because it was 2000, around when the dot-coms were starting. Some of the teachers came to me and said, why can't we find a child safe and friendly site with Christmas information on that isn't trying to sell them something? Because back then, any sites that were aimed at kids were really made by the likes of Disney, and they might have had some information on them, but they were generally trying to sell their stuff. So being a big kid myself and loving Christmas, I thought, oh, this would be, you know, I'd get my fingers wet with a bit of web design practice and I'll find out a bit about Christmas. And yeah, it's like one of the biggest sites on the web now and takes up lots of my time and I love it.
Yeah, there's no advertising on there at all.
No, that is the deal. It's got a deliberate no ads policy. I've been offered some big money over the years from some big companies for ads and nope, never going to happen.
Wow. How much money are we talking?
Five figures.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And you said no?
Yeah.
Wow. You must have a decent job then in that case.
No, I'm a freelance web designer.
Oh, wow. I see. Well, this is it, because I love your website. I think it's brilliant. It's really easy to use. And you actually got back to me when I filled in the form, you know, these web forms. Quite often I'll fill those in and hear nothing. So, yeah, you must be doing something right. So has anyone ever tried to actually, like, buy the website off you?
Yeah, every year I get a few emails from companies, generally sort of marketing agencies and things like that, wanting to buy it. And just, no, sorry, not interested.
Have you ever been given a price?
I have been given a price. I'm a bit loath to say the price on here because it was considerably more than I earn in a year. Let's put it like that.
So what sort of traffic do you get on the website then?
Oh, well, last December was about 20 million page loads, and it's gone up every year, though. That was the biggest. For
so 20 million? Still,
it hurts my brain to think about.
It hurts my brain. That's goodness me. I can't believe it. 20 million. That is incredible. That is incredible.
Yeah.
And it's been going 20 years.
Yes.
That's just in December. So do you notice like how many downloads you're getting in sort of June and sort of July? Because
you get a bit of Christmas in July, and you do get some in the summer as well when it's because lots of schools use it. So you get a bit of traffic in the late summer, early autumn as teachers are looking at it to do prep for the Christmas season.
So what would you be looking at in May, say, just out of interest?
It'd be tens of thousands, probably.
Okay. Oh, I see. Yeah. That's interesting, isn't it?
It really ramps up last 2 weeks of November and into December.
I must be one of those 10,000, because whenever I'm researching anything, I tend to end up on your website. If I Google it, yours always pops up.
Yeah. If you Google anything, it does tend to come up.
Well, it's fantastic. 20 million. So you mainly focus on it around the Christmas period then?
That's when I get a lot of the traffic from it, but I actually tend to try and spread the work out throughout the year so I'm not overloaded during November and December, because also, you know, I've got my normal clients to deal with as well, although they're pretty forgiving and allow me some time off to do stuff in November and December. But yeah, I'll be working on it throughout the year. I mean, this year's addition to the site is an online carol service. I actually had the idea for it last Boxing Day, and little did I think when I was putting it together in January and February last year that it would actually be really useful several months later, when lots of people might not be able to get out to a carol service this year.
Can you tell us a bit more about the online carol service? I have seen it on the website, but share it with the listeners.
Yeah, it's a simple service. It's 35 minutes long. There are a few carols and some readings. The readings are done by me. I've got well over 300 Christmas albums in my collection because I'm that sad.
That's not sad. That's cool.
And one of them is called, it's from 1956, I think. It's an old LP called Christmas in an English Country Church. It was made for an American audience. And of course, it's out of copyright. So that's where I've got the carols from. And it's brilliant because I live in the English countryside down in Somerset. Yeah, and it's complete with creaky pews and a slightly dodgy organ. And it's kind of really authentic to what a carol service sounds like.
And so how can people sort of get involved or come along, as it were?
Okay, well, if you just go to whychristmas.com, there's a big button on the front page that says online carol service.
Oh, and you just click on it and it's just going.
And then you hit play and away you go.
Oh, I see. Oh, so you can go anytime.
All of the words are there. All of the readings are there. So, yeah. And you can, you know, if you got the tech, you can put it on your telly or watch it on your phone, whatever you want to do it.
Oh, that's fantastic. I've just realised, actually, I haven't actually said much about the website itself. So do you want to tell us exactly what's on the website and what you do?
Yeah, sure. The online carol service is a new thing, but all the time the site's been up, it's had four main sections. There's Christmas traditions and customs, and that explains about things like Christmas trees and cards and crackers and puddings and cakes and why we have the things that we have at Christmas. Because, you know, most of us just grow up with it and, oh yeah, we have crackers. Fair enough. you talk to Americans about Christmas crackers and they give you a very odd look because most of them have never heard of them, which is a real shame. I hope to evangelize the world with crackers because we need more crackers. Then there's Christmas around the world, how Christmas is celebrated in lots of different countries around the world. I uploaded 3 new countries this week. So you can go and find out about, what did I do? I did Peru, Botswana, and Singapore I've done this week. And some of that information is brilliant, comes from visitors to the site. They go, hey, why haven't you got my country? And I go, well, because it's really hard to find information. Lots of the information in the Christmas Around the World site has come from visitors to the site from around the world telling me how they celebrate their Christmases, which is brilliant.
Well, that was going to be my next question. So your research, a lot of it is provided by people that visit the site?
Especially around the world, the customs and traditions. I've got a Christmas library in my bookcase, and I've also talked to other Christmas nuts, and I've done my own research. Then the next section is the Christmas story. So that's the factual history behind the bits of the Christmas story, like who the wise men might have been, what really happened at the census, you know, the status of the shepherds, that sort of thing. I'm Christian, so I'm really interested in that. And I've got lots of old books that have got lots of Jewish history in it. So that's a really interesting thing to learn because it's sort of you have your cute nativity play at schools and in churches and stuff. But, you know, Jesus wasn't born in a stable. The kings and the shepherds would have never have met. It's really interesting. And then there's Christmas fun and activities, and there's coloring, you can decorate an online tree, there's some recipes, crossword, word searches, all stuff like that as well. Yeah, the site hopefully is really easy to use. It's designed for primary school kids or elementary school kids, if you're listening to this where they have elementary schools. So my theory is that if elementary primary school kids can use it, anyone can use it.
Well, I can use it, so that makes sense. We're about the same level. Can you just tell our listeners the story you told me before?
Yeah, sure. It was about 5 years into making the site, when it was actually still relatively small, but it was just started to be picked up on Google and stuff. I came across a site that looked remarkably like mine and had remarkably similar information on it. Turned out that someone in Japan had basically copied and pasted my site. And it wasn't even in Japanese, it was in English still. So I sent him an email politely telling him that that wasn't really the thing to do, and please could he remove his site. And he did. I think he was just a student playing around with web design that sort of hadn't got his head around copyright. But
Did he use your logo?
No, it was a blue and white type site, but all of the pages were there and all of the information was on all of the pages.
That's incredible. That is incredible. See, that's how good the website is, kids. You see, people are ripping it off. Fantastic. So do you want to tell us a little bit about what happened with the podcast? Because James, for a little while, had a Christmas podcast, and it was long before the likes of Christmas Past and Can't Wait Till Christmas turned up. This was like possibly the original Christmas podcast.
We probably were one of the original Christmas podcasts. Yes, it was with a friend of mine called Steve, who's over in California. He was one of the very early podcasts. He did a bit of tech stuff. He did some churchy stuff as well. We became friends over emails. He knew I did a Christmas thing. He said, hey, why don't we do some Christmas recordings and put it out just 1 year to see what happens? So we did a few shows. I think we ended up doing it 7 or 8 years on the trot. In the end, for both of us, life overtook us and we just didn't have the time because we were doing one a day throughout December, and being 8 hours difference time-wise for the recording, that was fun as well.
I haven't listened to all of them. So I listened to the first few and it was just, you take it in turns. Is that not what happened later on then?
Yes. Yeah. Some of the time we recorded it together. Some of the time we did separate ones and edited it together. He did some of the editing. I did some of the editing, but it was really good fun to do. And you can still go and listen to it. If you do a search for, what's it called? The Lifespring Why Christmas Show, I think. If you type Lifespring Why Christmas,
how I found it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's Lifespring?
And that was his church.
Oh, so okay.
It was piggybacked on his church one because he had a big platform that was doing it all. It was before the likes of, Buzzsprout and Spotify. And
did you get a lot of listeners back then? Then
We got a few hundred, I think. Yeah.
That's not bad, is it? Back then?
No. Right. Yeah. I mean, and that
when did
was
you,
when
did it finish?
I can't remember, about 10 years ago, I think. So we've probably finished just as podcasts were becoming popular.
Thing is, if you'd stuck with it, yours would be the number one Christmas podcast. I've only been going about 7 months now, and I'm up in the hundreds, but it's escalating. Well,
that's good going, yeah.
Only because Christmas is coming, you know, it will die again in January, but it's nice. What I particularly like about it is meeting new people and that sort of thing. That's my favourite part of it. So can you share with us some of your favourite traditions that you've learnt about by doing the website?
I learned about some of the history behind some things that we take for granted over here, like Christmas cake. Everybody thinks, you know, your traditional fruit Christmas cake. That's really only been around since the Victorian times, when Christmas cake and Christmas pudding really started as the same thing. Back in the medieval times, it was basically an alcoholic porridge called frumenty that was sort of like half cider, half beer, bit of raisins and dried fruits chucked in, bit of spices chucked in, sort of mulled porridgey, winey beer that was eaten to show that you were rich and could afford alcohol and sugar and fruits and things like that. And then during the late Tudor time stewards into the Regency, as fruit and flour and sugar became cheaper, more and more of that got chucked in the porridge. So it got thicker and thicker and thicker until you had Christmas puddings. But during the Victorian times, they weren't too keen on the alcohol side of things. So they wanted a dish that ladies could eat at tea time. And so Christmas pudding was morphed into Christmas cake. So it still had a bit of the alcohol in it, but it was much lighter and more ladylike, and you could have it at afternoon tea.
So Christmas cake came from Christmas pudding?
Yes.
Ah.
But also via... Because the other thing is that Christmas, the other route that Christmas cake came through is that we had Twelfth Night cakes. Because right up until the early Victorian period, Twelfth Night was the big party, the end of Christmas. Now we tend to have Christmas parties before Christmas. But up until the Victorian times, when you had everybody worked on the land, you worked right up to Christmas Eve. And then you had off between Christmas and New Year as the 12 days of Christmas. And that was also, especially before the clocks changed to the Gregorian calendar, where we moved back 12 days. So it was actually colder over Christmas then, because it was like 12 days into January that we have now, which is traditionally a bit colder. So basically the land was unworkable. So you had 12 days off just sitting around not doing anything. And so 12th night, the 6th of January, Epiphany, that was your big party on the 5th of January, the evening of that. That was your blowout. And you had the rich people had 12th cakes. And sometimes in like really rich royal or big country houses, they were like a yard diameter. They were big.
Oh, wow.
And that's also where you're getting your things in the Christmas puddings come from. You know, you get your coin in the Christmas pudding.
Sixpence.
They're originally in the 12th cake. You had a bean or a pea or silver tokens in the 12th cake. And there were two of them, one for a man and one for a woman. And whoever found those were the king and the queen of the revels. And they could order people around during the party. So even if a servant got one, they could order their masters around during the 12th night party. And so again, the 12th cake and frumenty, two different sources, got put together and became Christmas pudding and Christmas cake, sort of merging in and then coming out again. It's really, really weird, but wonderful.
There we go. See, kids, you've learned something today. And how about your favourite tradition from overseas? What's the weirdest one or your favourite one?
Okay, I think Spain takes the biscuit, or especially Catalonia, because they've just got some absolute crackers over there. Catalonia, they have a special Christmas decoration that I'm yet to get hold of, that I really want to, but they're very hard to get over here. And they're called the cacatillo, which literally translates as the pooping log. And the pooping log is a log that's about 30 to 45 centimetres long, about a foot long. And it's got a smiley face. You know the faces you get on Thomas the Tank Engine? If you imagine a log that looks like Thomas the Tank Engine, propped up on two legs at the front, with wearing a red hat, and he has a blanket over its bottom. And then during December, during Advent, he's fed sweets and other goodies overnight by the parents. And so the blanket gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And then on Christmas Eve, kids dance around the log, hit it with a stick, sing it a song, and it poops out all the presents that they, and the goodies that they can then eat.
That's brilliant. And that, is that widely celebrated, is it?
In Catalonia, in northern Spain, it's the thing, yeah. And on a similar track in Catalonia, they seem to have a one-track mind. In their nativity scenes, and this is also true in some parts of Portugal and some parts of Italy and some other parts of, just sort of seems around the Mediterranean, they have a special character in the scene that's called the pooper. And it is a person who you tuck in the back of the scene who's having a squat with his trousers around his ankles. And they're a bit like our Guy Fawkes. They have different ones that come out every year, little figures. So you get politicians or sports stars or things like this putting caricatures as this little rude figure that you put in your nativity scene.
And have you any idea where that comes from?
It seems that it's from about the 18th century.
Oh, wow.
It was a way of sort of taking the mickey out of rich people. We had Guy Fawkes, you know, burning effigies. And down in Lewis, they burn the effigies of like politicians or somebody who's been a twit during the year. It's that sort of taking the rise out of rich or famous people.
I see. Because I was familiar with a thing called the pooping uncle. Is that the same?
It's a similar sort of thing, yeah.
Okay. Oh, there we go. See, kids? Educational. I haven't really got a lot more else I wanted to ask, actually. You've sort of covered everything. is there anything else you wanted to say?
Really, I think it's just there's so much to Christmas that we take for granted, and there's so much more interesting things than that you can find out, and that how different places do different things. And, you know, if you've got a phone, you are also carrying around Japanese Christmas cake in your pocket without even knowing it. Because the emoji that's called shortcake, which looks like a slice of sponge cake with a strawberry on the top, that's Japanese Christmas cake.
Oh, wow. I did not know that. This is
good. Do you know what the traditional Christmas dinner in Japan is?
Do you know what I do? Yes, I do. Because I did do an episode on it. But you can tell everyone if you want to.
It's a KFC.
That's right, yeah. I forget what, probably only about my fourth episode I covered.
Yeah.
So boys and girls, if you want to check out James's website, it's called whychristmas.com and it is fantastic. It's really accessible. And like the man says, there's no adverts, no adverts at all. You can just spend some time, no pop-ups, no hassle, and just learn a bit more about Christmas. More than you'll learn listening to this podcast, I'll tell you that, kids. And also this year, he's added the online carol service. So why not do that on Christmas Eve? Sit around with your family, plug it in and have a listen. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Thanks again, James.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Okay, boys and girls, because this is the last of the Yule Lads, I've got a full, complete orchestra playing the Yule Lads theme tune. I've got Robin is going to be playing the guitar, Juno is playing the piano, and I am playing the jingle bells. Are you ready, kids?
Yeah. One, two, three, four.
You're last. You're last. You're last. I love them. We'll love them. We'll love them. You're last. You're last. You're last. Yeah. You're last.
So, like I said at the start, there, this is the last of the Yule Lads, and the thing is, I won't lie to you, I was getting bored of them. But the feedback on the Yule Lads has been really positive, apart from Scott Newman. Oh, Scott Newman. But everyone else seems to love him. So this is the last Yule Lad, and his name is Curtis Nicker. Say that again. Curtis Nicker. Now, I've looked it up and done it on Google Translate, and that just translates as candlestick. But apparently his name is Candle Beggar. Apparently it should be Curta Bettler. But this is, so, you know, let's not get into that. Anyway, his name's Candlebeggar. He comes down on the 24th of December and he goes home on the 6th of January. And this is his verse of the Yule Lad's poem. The 13th was Candlebeggar. 'Twas cold, I believe. If he was not the last of the lot on Christmas Eve. He trailed after the little ones who, like happy sprites, ran about the farm with their fine tallow lights. So pretty much the deal is that he used to go around your house begging for candles. So back in those days, as it said in the poem, candles were made of tallow. If you don't know what tallow is, it's like a very, it's a solid waxy substance made out of animal fat. So the reason candle beggar is like begging for candles, chasing off the kids, going, oh, give us your candles, kids, give us your candles, is because he wants to eat their candles. That's what it is. So, like, imagine if that was this day and age, right? And he's knocking on your door going, oh, you haven't got any candles I can have. I'll be like, oh, yeah, come on in. I've got loads here. Have a candle. He's like, I can't eat this. It's made of wax. Are you trying to kill me? I'll be like, yeah, but you just asked for a candle. It's like, yes, and you've given me a wax candle. How am I supposed to eat that? And I reply, you're not supposed to eat it, mate. You're supposed to light it and get some light off of it. And he says, no, I'm supposed to eat it because that's what I do. All right, son? And I'm like, well, then you come to the wrong place, haven't you? And he's like, just give me your candles. I said, I've given you my candles. And he's like, look, I want your tallow candles. And I'm like, I haven't got any tallow candles. All right, candle beggar. And he's like, well, you're no use to me. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I'm saying, mate. My candles are wax. You're not going to get tallow candles. They don't make them anymore. You're going to get wax candles. Why don't, look, here's £5. Get yourself down a chip shop. Get a portion of chips. Get some other stuff. Maybe a Spam fritter. All right? Battered sausage. Maybe you can have a battered sausage. And he's like, no, that's not my name. My name's not chips and battered sausage. My name is Candle Beggar. And I'm like, I don't know what you want from me. I don't know what you want from me. This conversation probably is never going to take place. They had a vote in Iceland for their favourite Yule lad. And the winner of that vote was Candle Beggar. Okay, now if it had been me, I reckon I would have gone for Sheepcoat Clod. Because I like the deal with him. He was the one with the wooden legs. I liked him. The reason that Candle Beggar is the most popular Yule lad is because he's the last one to come. So he brings the biggest presents. That is pretty much like saying, who's your favourite auntie or uncle? Obviously, the one that gives me the biggest presents. That is awful. Okay, that's they're going to judge him on the size of the presents he brings. What if he came on like the first day? He wouldn't be the favourite then, would he? No, he wouldn't. Anyway, that's pretty much it with Candle Beggar, and that's pretty much it with the Yule Lads. However, there are a few more verses at the end of the poem that I'm going to read for you now. Are you ready? This is how the poem ends. On Christmas night itself, so a wise man writes, the lads were all restrained and just stared at the lights. Then one by one, they trotted off into the frost and snow. On Twelfth Night, the last of the lads used to go. Their footprints in the Highlands are effaced now for long. The memories have all turned to image and song. So there we go, boys and girls. That was the last of the Yule Lads. That was Candle Beggar. Boys and girls, I've already done the recommendation for this week. It was the fantastic Why Christmas website. However, I do have a request. Now, this has been a very difficult year for a lot of people. And I won't lie to you, it has affected me greatly. My income this year, I've lost almost 50% of it. And I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, oh, here it comes. Here comes the sob story. He's going to ask for money. He's going to want us to give a donation to the podcast. He's going to want us to pay to his Patreon. And that's not the case. I don't want anything from you. I have had a tough year. So have nearly everyone in one form or another. But there are some people out there who really are suffering this year. And if you did want to give a donation to the podcast, I don't want it. Because although I've suffered a bit, I don't need it. I am doing okay. But there are so many people out there that are suffering. And to quote Dickens, this is the time of year, of all others, when want is keenly felt and abundance rejoices. So if you've had a good year and you did want to give a donation to the podcast, like I said, I do not want it, but please do give a donation to one of the many, many worthy charities that are out there, because there are so many people this year that do need it. So if you've got something to spare and you'd like to give something to the podcast, again, don't, because you can't. I'm not giving you any information. There's no way you can give me any money. I don't want it, but I do think if you can, you should give it to a worthy cause. And that is it, boys and girls. And that is pretty much it for the whole year. I will be doing one more short episode on Christmas Eve to wish you all a Merry Christmas. I do hope you'll listen to that one. But as full episodes go, with all the usual ragtag content, this is the last one. Now, I know that many, many of you are only listening in December, and you only will listen in December, and that's absolutely fine. If you want to stick with us, I am going to be taking a break, but I will be back again at the end of January with the first of 2021's episodes. If you're one of the listeners that's only listening in December, that's absolutely fine. And if you don't want to stick with us throughout the year and you just want to come back in December, I totally understand it. However, maybe as the year goes by, you'll think, do you know what? I need a bit of Christmas. And you can come back. I'll be here every 2 weeks throughout the year. And you can come and go as you please. So, until Christmas Eve, when I'm back with a short episode. And I say a short episode, I've got some really great ideas for that episode, and I do hope you'll listen to it, because it's only going to be short, but it's going to be so much fun. If you don't listen to that, I just want to wish you the most wonderful Christmas ever. I've had a blast doing this podcast for this year, and I know I'm going to continue having a blast for years to come. So please have a wonderful Christmas with you and yours.
You know I love you. Merry Christmas.
I really wanted to see you, and I think you're beautiful, and I feel really warm when I am around you, and my tongue swells up. So, do you want to go eat food?